Hi, welcome to the ProPublica podcast. I'm Mike Webb. This week, we brought our managing editor, Steve Engelberg, into the studio to talk about the way ProPublica operates. Engelberg is the former managing editor of The Oregonian, and he worked at The New York Times for 18 years, including stints in Washington, D.C., Warsaw, Poland, and as the paper's investigations editor. He's won numerous awards throughout his career, including the Pulitzer Prize. We began our conversation by talking about ProPublica's practice of collaborating with other media outlets on investigative stories. In the first quarter of 2010, ProPublica published 24 long-form stories with 15 different publishing partners, ranging from This American Life to Newsweek to The Daily Beast. I asked Steve why collaboration with other media was important to ProPublica.
Well, I think there was a, sort of question of how do you create a journalistic organization which, first of all, has no publishing platform, has no newspaper or magazine, and how do you get your work out there? Now, the internet seemingly has no barriers to entry. You can go out and publish anything. You don't need a printing press. You don't have to have a sort of large expanse of money and so on in a factory. But the truth of the matter is these established platforms, though they may be fading somewhat, are still very powerful means of getting attention. And what they have done for us is allow our stories to get out in the world in ways that would otherwise not have been possible. So that was, I think, the first and most important decision we made in creating ProPublica, which was to, work with partners on an exclusive basis.
So how do you decide where to place the stories?
Well, it's really more of an art than a science. We do try to think about whether stories fit a particular platform. You start with that question. And there are occasionally stories that are so obviously suited to radio or print or broadcast that we head in that direction immediately. So we try to sort of match the subjects we have to the potential partners, which are almost infinite. Having said that, it really is, occasionally, surprising, random, and not always successful. We pitch things to people that we think are sure winners, and they don't buy it. And sometimes we take a kind of flyer, and people take things and surprise us.
I'm wondering about what makes a good ProPublica story.
Well, we have a very clear and focused mission. Our stories are about trying to bring change. You have a staff here that could do anything. And so what we really try to do is focus on two things: stories that will bring change and stories that affect the greatest number of people. So if you have a choice between a story which is interesting but is not likely to prompt change, we would tend to go in the direction of things that make a difference. And then if you have two stories of equal power, if one story affects a group of 10 and the other affects a group of 100,000, we would sort of tend toward that. So we have been fairly disciplined in what we think a story is. And I know it when I see it. It's a story that holds people accountable. It's a story that names names. And it's a story which, at the end of it, if you were so moved to write your congressman or governor or senator, you would know exactly what to say.
Well, I know in the description in ProPublica's mission, it says we try to do stories of that have moral force. Can you? And one of the questions I most often ask is, what is moral force?
Well, it's a little bit like that old Supreme Court line about pornography. I know it when I see it. Moral force, I think, is the kind of thing where you are steaming mad at the end of the story and you say to yourself, that just can't be, that shouldn't be, that must not be. And I think that different people are moved in different ways, but you know it when you see it. When the journalism makes you so angry that you just feel you have to do something or say something or tell somebody about it, that's a story with moral force. And that's what we're trying to find.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so you were one of the original ProPublicans, and you've really built the staff from scratch. Did it turn out the way you envisioned it?
To be absolutely honest, it turned out better than we envisioned it. We hired, upwards of 18 reporters all at once, and we tried to be very, very careful in the hiring process. We had 1,300 or so people apply for those jobs, and we were looking for very particular kinds of people who could do great journalism, but also people who could work in a small newsroom and collaborate with each other. And I'm very happy and proud to say that we not only found great journalists, we found great people.
When Paul first approached you about this, did you have any reservations?
Oh, absolutely. When I was working in 2007 as managing editor of The Oregonian, it was a Newhouse newspaper, still is, and we had a guaranteed written guarantee of a job for life. And I was leaving an organization with 150 years of history and a guaranteed job for an organization that did not exist and whose model was entirely unproven. And so that was a bit of a pause for me. But at the end of the day, I think the opportunity to do what we were talking about a moment ago, which is to build a staff from the ground up, to create it exactly as one might want, is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I didn't want to pass that up.
How important a role does the web development team play at ProPublica?
Our approach to the web is very much in line with our approach to everything else around here. It's a small shop. It's a newsroom. There were people when we started who asked the question, why are you going to this model? Why full-time employees? Isn't it more expensive? I think this has been vindicated in innumerable ways. It turns out that using part-time people to do investigative reporting is a very difficult model. They have obviously incentives to complete work quickly because they're paid more if they do it faster. Full-time employees in a newsroom, our reporters and editors come to work every single day and they work together. There are conversations here in the break room. There are conversations over lunch. There are conversations in our elevators, which occasionally trap our reporters together in them, forced conversations. No, but quite seriously, we have a lot of interaction. And the web development team, the people who do the website, are really not, as they might be in a larger organization, a separate group. What they are journalists who express their journalism on the web. And they contribute story ideas, they contribute approaches, they ask intelligent questions, and they help take the material that we have in text and turn it into the magic that you see at ProPublica.org. So they are integral, and their integral nature, I think, is part of a larger approach to how we do things around here, which is that everybody who works here is a piece of a larger enterprise.
And I think part of that's because they're actually involved in the story development ideas and the story meetings and...
Very much so. I mean, I think that, I will say that, you know, when I was a New York Times editor in 1998 and the people from NewYorkTimes.com who then worked in another building began coming to a weekly meeting, I was the first person at the New York Times to invite so-called web developers to a weekly enterprise meeting there to discuss all the big stories the New York Times was developing. And I felt then and I feel now that you get the best work from an organization when people all have a part of it, when they are pulling together toward a goal that everybody understands. And you can't do that with the web or anything else if you say, okay, here's my brilliant story. Will you please now be, in essence, an appliance and illustrate it? You know, you don't treat photographers that way. You don't treat graphic artists that way. And you certainly don't treat the people who are the full means of publication that way and expect to get the kind of results that we get.
Do you feel like you have to constantly be putting new content up on the website to maintain reader interest?
I think it's essential on a number of levels. I think reporters who are covering an area and covering a story as we are right now on, let's say, British Petroleum and the Gulf, need to publish from time to time and fairly regularly, both for the health of the site and for their sources and for their own knowledge. I think publication begets publication. It's thinking about writing causes you to think in a different way and causes you to sort of advance the story. And these are good habits that were developed, 100 years ago in the history of journalism, and they work for daily newspapers and they work for a website.
Do you think the nonprofit model is financially sustainable?
I think there will be journalistic nonprofits in the future. I think if you ask the question, can the nonprofit model in some sense replace what has been lost, the early sort of reviews on that is no. We have, after all, seen thousands upon thousands of reporters laid off at newspapers across the country. And though we have a robust nonprofit sector, it is not of the size and magnitude and shape that is going to replace what we're missing here. In state capitals today, there are far fewer reporters tracking what's going on than have been. Can we make a difference? Sure. We have looked at some stories in state capitals, notably in California, where we looked at the state nursing board. We have filled some gaps in places. But we shouldn't fool ourselves, and nor should anybody else. ProPublica is not going to make up for a 50-state trend in which capital coverage basically is being eviscerated.
Well, what's the biggest challenge facing ProPublica as you go forward?
I think we have a couple of challenges. I think challenge number one for ProPublica is we are in the process of trying to move from a startup to a more sustainable economic model. And while we will never, I think, see us, making excess amounts of money, We would like to raise significantly more from philanthropy, from foundations, from individual donations. You'll see on our site a prominent opportunity for people to donate, which we have actually seen some small donations come in. We started off, the Sandlers were nearly 100%, Herb and Marion Sandler were nearly 100% of our budget in terms of contributions. That number is significantly fallen over the last couple of years, but they still form the majority of the money that comes in here. And both they and we would like to see diverse funding. The second thing is, you know, having had a very, very good fortune in the year 2009, having a lot of projects, including our Pulitzer Prize-winning work on the hospital in New Orleans, come to fruition, the challenge of any organization which does well initially is to maintain and expand that record and level of excellence. And that is a daily challenge. We are trying to do the most difficult stories in the most competitive, hotly contested arenas. And it is true that investigative reporting has less money behind it than it did, say, 5 years ago. That's true. But in the areas that we play, ProPublica, where we are going up against the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, the Washington Post, and trying to get the most important stories you could imagine, we find things are still fairly competitive. And we try to take our reporters and our work in directions that other people aren't going. And in this world of instant access to information, it's sometimes pretty hard to come up with an incredibly original idea that nobody else has thought of. And sometimes we think of something that we think is that original, and then the next thing we know, it's something the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post is chasing. So I think the challenge of maintaining excellence and diversifying our funding are two very big things that are going to keep us occupied for the years to come.
Well, Steve Engelberg, Managing Editor of ProPublica, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
That wraps up another ProPublica podcast. You can read all of our stories online at ProPublica.org. This week's podcast was produced by Brent Gardner-Smith. I'm Mike Webb. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.